Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. Thank you for joining me. Lots to talk about around the NBA draft, of course. It is, what, a week and a day away from happening, and the rumors continue to swirl. Workouts continue to happen, even in Memphis, although nothing particularly exciting on that front. We'll talk about what has been happening. And we'll get to some of the scenarios that may take place on draft night as we start to kind of narrow down some of the things that are going on. But before we do that, I do want to kind of talk about this situation that has happened surrounding Robert Pera and his appearance in Memphis today. To give you kind of the rundown from my perspective, the Grizzlies, their owner, now controlling owner, now has a much larger amount of the control because of the outcome of the buy-sell clause thing. Robert Pera was in town, a very rare appearance in Memphis. And there are many of us, myself included, but not just me, who have had interview requests with Robert Pera outstanding for a long time, well over a year in my case, but I can't speak for everyone's timetable. So we're all down at FedEx Forum, or at least a lot of media that cover the team on a regular basis are down at FedEx Forum for these draft workouts. Robert Pera is in the building. He's going to do Chris Vernon's show on Grind City Media. So I figure, like, this makes perfect sense. Why not? There's literally a press conference set up for Chris Wallace and anyone else who's going to do the post-workout setting. Why not bring Robert Pera down to speak to everyone and knock that thing out? Have an opportunity for him to be questioned by independent journalists, not team-affiliated journalists, and go from there. I mean, there's a lot of issues that haven't been addressed by Robert Pera that still haven't been addressed after today. And it would have been a great way to kind of knock that out. I don't think anybody, I certainly wasn't asking for some kind of exclusive one-on-one access. I can't speak for anyone else, but that wasn't my request. My request was that they bring Robert Pera, that he just simply show up, be willing to answer some questions in a group setting. That'd be it. That was the end of it. From my perspective. And then what he does after that, it didn't matter. This is where the matter has gotten, unfortunately, personal and messy. And that's not an area that I'm going to get into, because that was never my point, and that's not the way I do things. So I'm not going to do that. But it was never my discussion about what he did before or after that. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, obviously, the Grizzlies are competing against the local market with Grind City Media. Obviously, they are skewing it so that they are going to get their clicks and control their message. They've been doing that for a while. So that's nothing new. But the Grizzlies are still, from a Memphis standpoint, and then I would think from a Grizzly fan standpoint, the Grizzlies are still a public enterprise. They still receive funding from a bond issue that's ultimately paid by taxpayers. That still is a civic responsibility. It's not as if they just speak to season ticket holders or specific fans of the team. And furthermore, I think it's just good practice to allow yourself to be questioned by people who aren't affiliated with the team and ultimately paid by the owner himself. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's just propaganda. If you're only interview is with somebody who's paying you, I don't care what you say, how you disclaim it or whatever. That's what it is. Somebody's paying you and you're interviewing them. You're not going to be able to ask them the same questions that you would in an independent setting. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no body on earth that would accept that sort of arrangement as an independent arrangement. You can look at it, it can be entertaining, it can be all sorts of things. You can get some information out of it for sure. But that's still the deal. That's still what it is. So, I mean, that's the part that doesn't, you could do that. You could do that all day long. Doesn't matter. My point, and the point of that others have made, maybe not as vocally as I have, but nonetheless, is just he needs to also, I mean, hell, once every, it's been 3 years, 4 years since he faced any sort of scrutiny from an independent outlet, since he was even here, really. So all I'm saying is that should be part of the gig. It shouldn't just be, he's literally in the same building as we are. All he'd have to do is just go down. He was up top, come down the elevator, get in front of this thing for 10 minutes, go back up, and then do whatever. If he wants to do Grind City Media, great. No problem. As long as he's made available to at least take some questioning from independent outlets, me, the Commercial Appeal, local TV, other radio outlets, whatever it may be, that's the right thing to do. That's the right way to do business. And if you're a fan out there, and presumably if you're listening to this, then you're a fan, you know, there are many issues that you didn't hear about from Robert Pera because you didn't get proper independent questioning. You didn't hear about his role in David Fizdale's firing. You didn't hear about, you know, what's the role of Joe Abadi in all of this. You didn't hear about, you know, what his relationship with Marc Gasol is like, and, you know, those sorts of things, in the behind the scenes about how all that went down, going all the way back to when he first came on board with Jason Levien. You know, these are really relevant things, and in particular, you know, much more detail about, you know, where things stand in Memphis, what the future holds for the franchise here, in spite of interest from other cities, and you know, a lease that eventually is going to need, you know, some sort of renewal. Those questions aren't asked, aren't being discussed, won't be discussed until you have independent questioning. And so that's a shame for the fans. It's a really missed opportunity. And that was what, you know, I tweeted to that effect. You know, that's the sad thing to me, is that if the owner is only allowing himself to be interviewed in a lens that he ultimately pays for and controls, then that's just propaganda. And that's, you know, should be reflective. That's what's happening. That's what's happening. And so it does make you think that he's either A, unwilling to accept independent scrutiny because he doesn't want to answer those questions. Maybe he's afraid to answer those questions. Maybe the answers aren't sufficient. Maybe he's not comfortable. I don't know. You've got that, or you've got B, the Grizzlies are just nakedly propagandizing the situation in order to try to generate clicks for themselves and to try to control the message in a overwhelming fashion. And that has been a trend for them. Again, either way, I think it's a disservice for the fans. And it's certainly a disservice for independent journalism. If that's something that you care about at all, it's a disservice to you out there. And so I'm going to continue to speak up about it. And I know that, you know, as I said, I think a pretty ridiculous attempt to kind of push the issue to something else by a lot of people out there, and, you know, Vernon in particular. And I'm not gonna play that game. I don't do that. I don't care about that. The issue continues to be not that access. The issue continues to be the lack of any other access that Robert Pera has given. And I think it's a civic responsibility. I think it's a responsibility of an owner. I think it's a responsibility of a franchise. I think it's ridiculous that it's been years and years since he has been available for that kind of scrutiny. I think that's ridiculous. And to try to say with a straight face that an interview in a team-controlled setting by an employee is the same thing or is a decent substitute is insulting on its face. I mean, you guys are way smarter than that. And I know you won't accept that. Nobody with, you know, any awareness of the situation would accept that. So that's really what this is all about. So I wanted to kind of address it and get down to the nuts and bolts of it. It is not personal for me. I'm not getting into any kind of wrestling promos, nonsense like that. I'm not getting into that. That isn't the issue. People can try if they want. I'm a grown up. I got too many other things going on. I'm not getting into that. But I am going to stand up for independent outlets. I am going to stand up for the right thing access-wise. And I do think that Robert Pera is obligated. Doesn't have to be me, but certainly outlets that aren't team-controlled should have an opportunity to ask questions to the controlling owner of the Memphis Grizzlies, pure and simple. Grizzlies with a couple of workouts since the last time we spoke. The one that's most important, two public or I guess open workouts and one private workout with Wendell Carter. That's the most significant of the workouts. I don't know that Carter is necessarily a candidate at four. I like Carter. I think he's a guy that could be, depending on how well his mobility comes along, depending on his opportunity to be able to use his footwork, depending on how he develops. I think he's got a tremendous future. He's a really talented guy, and in other drafts, he would be easily a top five guy. In other years, but this is a very loaded year, and so he's not. He was in town Monday for a private workout. It was one that had been talked about for a while, and so it has happened. I asked Chris Wallace earlier today about whether there were any other workouts that were scheduled. He said none at this time, though those things do come up relatively quickly, so something could emerge if a guy's schedule changes. You do see a flurry usually in the last week, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, next week leading up to the draft. Sometimes you will see last minute changes of heart from prospects as their agents start to kind of realize that maybe things are going to go a little bit differently than they thought, or maybe teams are going to move up, or maybe there's all kinds of things that happen that change the course of the draft, and you may see some guys come in late. But at least as of right now, nothing is on the books for the next few days for any of the candidates at number four. We've talked about that. I think it's a shame. I think it's ridiculous that whether the blame lies with the Grizzlies or the players or their agents or whoever, it is a shame. It's ridiculous that you see Atlanta getting everybody and the Grizzlies getting nobody, and there's one spot between them. Doesn't really... doesn't add up when you look at it like that. So the Grizzlies, though, did work out a number of candidates, probably for the 32nd pick, Devontae Graham being the most notable of those candidates. And, I don't know. These seem to be more along the lines of filling out your summer league squad, the hustle, all that stuff. I don't see a huge amount other than one or two guys per workout that are going to be in the mix for 32 or any other pick that the Grizzlies might end up buying. There have been a few, but it's not super exciting to deal with those kinds of workouts. And I don't know really what to do with them, because the Grizzlies, we've seen over the last couple of years, they've bought the picks with guys that didn't work out. It's really no indication. There's no correlation, at least, between those workouts and what they're necessarily going to do with those guys. It may impact summer league, but other than that, I don't think there's going to be too much. Speaking of summer league announcements, the schedule has been released, and the Grizzlies will play the Pistons, the Magic, and the Kings. That Pistons game will be the first one, 6 o'clock tip off on the 7th of July. Then the Kings, that's a 6:30 tip off on the 8th. The Kings will be on the 10th at 3:30. And then after that, there'll be playoff games based on record and all that, and won't know that until everything's done. But that will be later on that week, so the 11th and 12th in that neighborhood. I think typically you get at least 5 games in the Vegas Summer League. And the Grizzlies are also going to be participating in the Utah Jazz Summer League. So there will be a huge amount, by Summer League standards, a huge amount of games to look at for the Grizzlies and for their drafty draftees, whoever they happen to be. Interestingly enough, you'll see the Kings, it'll be the number 2 pick, the Magic, number 6 pick, and, well, the Pistons, you know, no one there, but at least not anyone that you're going to get real excited about. But, you know, hey, man, look, it's still cool. It's still Summer League. It's still actual basketball of some sort, and it's less than a month away, so get pumped. Former Piston Jerry Stackhouse, speaking of Pistons, was in the house on Tuesday for Grizzly draft workouts. The Grizzlies still have not announced officially in what is kind of a stringing this thing out. I guess they're waiting for the official word or the staff to be complete. But Jerry Stackhouse is definitely in the mix. Also, Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that Vitaly Potapenko is going to be another assistant coach under JB Bickerstaff, as JB and the Grizzlies are really filling out this roster in an interesting way. A lot of young assistant coaches to go along with JB is a very young head coach, so a lot of energy. Potapenko is has been part of Cleveland's setup for the last 5 years in a player development role. Again, everything seems to be skewing in a player development direction. Chad Forcier as lead assistant, that is his reputation. We talked about that. Jerry Stackhouse working with Raptors 905, their G League team up there. He's a former G League Coach of the Year, won a G League title with the reputation of being, you know, pretty strong defensively and being able to work with young talent and help nurture them. You see the Raptors have done a really good job of putting those guys into their lineups, making it work. And now Potapenko, same kind of thing with that same sort of reputation coming in. It's obvious the direction that they're going, and I applaud it. I think it's a really good idea. It's the right way to go. You know, Lord knows the Grizzlies have struggled in terms of player development. It has not been an area of strength, to say the very least, for the team. They need to develop these guys in the worst possible way. So this gives a real good opportunity to do just that with that staff. And I like the direction that they're going. That should pretty much, I guess, we throw in Greg Buckner and you throw in, you know, the rest of the staff that's in place. I'm guessing that's probably going to be it for the outside hires from JB. I don't know for sure, but I would guess that's probably going to wrap it up, and going to be an interesting group to see how they change the way things were done, how much they are willing to do that, how much they're going to rock the boat, and then to see players start to show those signs of development, to see if they actually do develop, to see if things do change in that department. It's going to be really exciting to kind of see how that goes, particularly when you add the fourth pick, assuming that's where they end up drafting. When you add the fourth pick to that whole deal, should be a lot of fun. After the break, we'll talk about the latest in the rumors and how that affects the Memphis Grizzlies. So the hot thing now, from a rumor perspective, is Jaren Jackson Jr. shooting up the boards. Michael Porter Jr. as well, shooting up the boards after his workout last week. There'll be another workout for him, by the way, later on this week, just for lottery teams where they're expected to get a little more medical information to make sure that everybody's happy with his back and how it has recovered before anyone pulls the trigger. So those guys are kind of elevating up the board. And it's interesting because it happened after, you know, Jaren Jackson's case, it happened after his workout in Phoenix. It kind of correlated with the discussion that maybe other teams were really starting to look hard at him as a top three type guy. And if that's the case, then you'd have to trade up, and you'd have to trade into two or three, because one is not going anywhere. I think DeAndre Ayton's pretty well signed, sealed, and delivered in Phoenix. So, you know, Jaren Jackson, if he's a target, that means someone's going to have to jump up. And the Grizzlies, I mean, I guess, could be a target as well. You know, if he's available at four and the Grizzlies aren't happy with him, or, you know, if Luke is gone, or, you know, whatever it may be, maybe they feel like they can get who they're looking for and trade down. That's another option. But this is interesting to see how hot and heavy teams get. And it's always, there's always a reason for this stuff. There's always a reason for teams leaking information, for agents leaking information, for people, you know, coming out and saying that, you know, guys are jumping up the board or dropping down, or there's teams that are really inquiring about this guy, or, man, it was an amazing workout. There's always an ulterior motive. And in this case, it could well be that, you know, the teams at 2-3 and maybe for the Grizzlies at 4 to try to drum up some interest and to make sure that, you know, there's a nice market to move up. Again, it could be that you want to make it crystal clear that if you want that guy, you're going to have to jump up and get him, or we're going to take him. Try to motivate somebody who might be on the fence as to whether or not they're going to actually do it. You know, does that stuff really work? I don't know. But I do think there's a lot of truth to it. I do know that it has happened where you've seen teams that have actually floated trades that could happen and kind of, you know, put it out there, or had someone sort of put it out there as a rumor to get a feel for what the reaction would be. It's called a trial balloon. We've seen those happen. So, you know, the smokescreen is not, it's not an insane concept. It's not unusual. It wouldn't be shocking. But you have to take all that into account when you look at this. Nonetheless, as you know, I love Jaren Jackson. Love his game. Not surprised that he'd be, you know, piquing a lot of interest. To me, he epitomizes what you want in a modern big. His ability to shoot, you know, he's a 40% three-point shooter with a decent number of attempts. He's an 80% free-throw shooter. Shot blocker, 3 shot blocks per game, 14% block percentage, which was better than Mo Bamba, you know, fourth, I think, in the country in that regard. Nobody in the last 3 decades has put those things together. The outside shot, 40% three-point shooter, free-throw shooting, which is a great metric typically to show if a guy's going to be able to shoot at the next level. Free throws are a really strong indicator that the shot is real. And he's an 80% free throw shooter. Then, of course, the blocks, you know, you combine all those things, and we've not seen anyone that actually can put all those things together. No one's got those combined stats, at least in the last 30 years. So I can't go back any further than that on the database, but no one has had those stats. So you can see why, as a modern big, particularly a guy that's very athletic, can put the ball on the floor, can switch on the defensive side, can defend in space, is also really, you know, he's not just a weak side shot blocker or anything like that. He's a very instinctive shot blocker. He's a very instinctive player. You know, a lot of tremendous quick twitch, a lot of great instincts when you watch him. So I could see why he's jumping up boards. It would make sense if that were the case. From a Grizzly standpoint, you know, my board personally, I still have Luka Doncic as my top guy, with Jaren Jackson a close second. But I could certainly make the case that Jaren Jackson's upside is better than anyone else's in the draft, and that if he were to turn into the ideal version of himself, that would be the best player in the draft, better than any other player's ideal version of themselves, based on what he would be able to do on both sides of the floor. The Porter thing, from what I hear, is very real from the Grizzlies, that there are definitely people within the organization. There's definitely a strong affinity for Michael Porter. Now, how that, you know, relates to Luka Doncic, for example, if it was a straight choice between the two, I would think they would take Luka, but I'm not sure of that. There's definitely, you know, if Porter's up there with, you know, somebody else, they'd certainly take Porter, I think, over Jaren Jackson. I don't get the sense from the Grizzlies, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but I don't get the sense from the decision makers there that they're just super high on Jaren Jackson, not necessarily felt a great deal of enthusiasm about him. So, not my thing, but I do think that if a team was going to move up for Jaren Jackson, I think the Grizzlies, depending on who had been taken, would be willing to discuss, you know, that kind of a swap. But you know, at this point in the draft, you really don't know. I do know that the Porter thing is real with the Grizzlies, And I do think they would certainly take Luka if he's available. Those are things I feel pretty good about. The rest of it, a lot of conjecture. And truthfully, no one really knows, man. That's why there's all the smoke out there. No one really knows. It's a fascinating draft. Everyone agrees that there's a huge amount of talent, but not everyone agrees about what that talent looks like and in what order that talent should go. That's why we have these intriguing discussions. And in fact, it's why we did the Locked On NBA mock draft across the entire Locked On NBA podcast network. Obviously, I represent the Grizzlies. You can get that on the Locked On NBA pod. The first part, which does include the Grizzlies, should be out as you hear this, with analysis from SI's Jeremy Wu of each pick. So I don't know if I should spoil who I picked. I will say that the first three picks did not go the way I wanted them to go. So it left me with a real quandary at four. And I went in a probably an unconventional direction, but it's one that I feel pretty sound about. And I talked about it a little bit there. I'm curious what Jeremy has to say. He's going to analyze each of the picks as we go along through the entire Locked On Podcast Network. You can hear the hosts discuss that. So it's really cool. Check it out again on Locked On NBA. Also, as we wrap this up, I'll leave the last portion of the pod for my friend Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors as he talks about the Raptors' brand new coach. It's a coach that's been around that organization and assistant who jumps up into the top chair, Nick Nurse. He is the new coach of the Toronto Raptors. Sean Woodley, he talks about that from Locked On Raptors. I'll do that to wrap the show up. Thanks so much for joining me. We'll have a lot more this week as we continue draft prep here on Locked On Grizzlies.
Hey, what's up? It's Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors, and the Raptors have hired a head coach after a month of waiting, a long, exhaustive search in which they interviewed a whole wide range of candidates, ranging from Sarunas Yasikevicius to Ettore Messina. They have landed with a guy who was in front of their faces all along, assistant coach, five-year assistant coach under Dwayne Casey. Nick Nurse has been named head coach of the Toronto Raptors. It's an interesting move. It is, you know, I think a lot of people, Raptors fans' initial reaction was that it was kind of not the right move. I think a lot of people kind of were hoping for a new outside voice to come in, considering you fired Dwayne Casey, who's an excellent head coach, who did a lot of great for this team. And if you're going to fire him, then maybe it's only a half measure to hire the assistant coach. I kind of disagree. I think Nick Nurse has a lot of potential. He's coached for 30 plus years. He coached in England. He's a two-time D-League Coach of the Year and also was the architect of the Raptors' brand new offense this season. You know, it got a lot of headlines. It got a lot of press on how the Raptors kind of changed the way they play offense, and it was a top five offense in the regular season, and it was the second best offense by offensive rating in the postseason. For the first time in 5 years, offense is not what let the Raptors down in the playoffs. It was defense, and that is probably more under the purview of Dwayne Casey and other assistant coach Rex Kalamian. Nick Nurse was the offensive coordinator. So he is going to be tasked with sort of redefining how this Raptors team plays defense. And maybe it is just a limitation sort of implied by the players on the roster, but Nick Nurse is going to be tasked with sort of trying to find a new way for this team to play defense while also upholding the offense that it really maintained this season and show that it can work in the playoffs despite maybe having some sort of limitations built in with guys like DeMar DeRozan running so much of the offense. A good thing about this move is that Nick Nurse already has a lot of institutional knowledge with the Raptors. He's been here 5 years, of course. He reportedly, from all accounts, has a great relationship with Kyle Lowry, which was always going to be a pressure point for any new coach coming in. It was always going to be necessary for that coach to be able to establish a relationship with Kyle Lowry, who notoriously has not been the easiest guy to coach in the world. And he even famously said when Dwayne Casey was let go that they never really saw eye to eye, but they still made it work and they forged a good relationship there. And it's good, at least in my mind, that Nick Nurse is coming in with an established relationship with Kyle Lowry, whereas if you come in with a new guy, maybe that relationship never really blossoms, and that's just a big risk with your best player who's still here for two more years on $30+ million a year. The other thing too with the Raptors is that they're in a pretty good spot considering all things. They're a 59 win team coming off of 59 wins with a one seed. They've made the playoffs 5 years in a row. Maybe they didn't need a big giant change to sort of shake up the entire room. Maybe a subtle move like this with Nick Nurse, he can sort of bring in his own ideas that maybe got suppressed suppressed under a guy like Dwayne Casey. Not to say that Dwayne Casey suppressed ideas, but, you know, any person who is under a boss and eventually gets promoted, in theory, would like to do things differently than the previous boss. And there are things that they wish they could improve on and that they want to improve on when they get the opportunity. And I would assume we're going to see that from Nick Nurse. All reports are that he's a more experimental guy and sort of an outside-the-box thinker who I think will probably get the most out of sort of a strange roster that the Raptors have, and hopefully maybe sort of use the regular season as a bit more of a testing ground for the playoffs, as opposed to Dwayne Casey, who really sort of went out for a lot of wins in the regular season. And that's not a bad thing by any means, but at the Raptors' point in their win curve, I think it's more about trying to use the regular season as an establishing ground for what you're going to do come playoff time. And maybe Nick Nurse and his sort of experimental nature can kind of work on that and get the Raptors a little bit more prepared for what postseason basketball brings. Either way, I'll have a lot more about this on the next episode of Locked On Raptors. It should be out by now if you're hearing this. So tune into Locked On Raptors. This is about 30 minutes talking about the brand new Raptors head coach, Nick Nurse. We go in depth on the good stuff, the concerns, the bad stuff, and sort of the optics of it. Tune into Locked On Raptors to hear that, and thank you for listening.